Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Great beer is about drinkability. Doesn't matter the style.
You guys are like walking beer Wikipedia.
That's the first time that you've ever accepted me as a person.
Or you have a fermentation in your gut.
Yeah. I'm jet propelled at all times.
How many guys do you think that you have the privilege to slap?
Somebody who's never tasted a commercial example, and this is how you know everything about this beer? Please, you don't.
I think it's bullshit.
I think it's bullshit too.
Wow. Are you guys going to arm wrestle?
No. We're going to teabag fight instead.
Yeah. You heard of Junkyard Wars?
No. Can I get another high five, Beavis?
Now, live from the Brewing Network studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
Welcome, everyone, to The Session. We're back here talking craft beer, talking LA craft beer specifically, and we are on with the boys from Paperback Brewing Company. We have Chris and Zambo. Welcome to the show, boys.
How's it going? Thanks for having us.
Not too bad. Yeah, thanks for coming on. Just to get right to it, Zambo, we've talked to you a while ago. You used to brew at the 21st Amendment, our good friend Sean O'Sullivan.
That's right.
So I was really excited when I saw your name on the sheet come through. I was like, all right, cool. I like having repeat guests that kind of wander around a little bit. I like it. It's fun. And I can't wait to talk to you a little bit about what you've been up to and how you landed here and the beers you're pumping out now.
All right.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun. Before we do that, though, I want to thank our sponsor, More Beer. If you guys are looking to upgrade your homebrewing lifestyle or your coffee roasting lifestyle or, I don't know, any lifestyle you can do at home, I suppose, morebeer.com is the place to go. They have absolutely everything for you to make great beer at home. Just hit them up, and they have all sorts of equipment and recipes and ingredients and knowledge and know-how, which I think are two underrated things in the homebrew industry these days. More Beer, I think they just celebrated like their 25th anniversary. Or maybe it was the 20th. But yeah, they've been around since 95. So they know what they're doing, and they can help you know what you're doing too, which is sort of funny how that works. So check them out, morebeer.com. They bring you this and every session. All right, Chris, let's start with you, man. So you are one of the founders of Paperback. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm one of the three founders.
All right, tell me how that happened. Were you homebrewing and just farting around?
Yeah, so I was homebrewing at the time. You know, I was in my mid-30s. I had a beard, so I decided to homebrew.
You have to.
And I met my business partner through an inter-office email exchange. So I was selling one of my fridges because I was moving to a new apartment that had a fridge already there. So I was selling it, and I took some pictures of the fridge, and I sent it on this. We had this email blast thing where you could, you know, sell, you know, a broken dollhouse or, you know, raise money for, you know, cats or whatever.
Yeah.
And I sent that out to my company, and my partner responded and was like, "Hey, what's going on in the bottom drawer there?" And I had all these whole hops, you know. I'm like, well, I'm a home brewer.
Okay.
And so we, you know, we started chatting about it. I gave him some recommendations on beers that I liked. He came down and I gave him one of my beers, which was probably horrible at the time. I had been doing it for 2 months with extracts. I jammed probably about 6 ounces of Citra hops into a 5-gallon carboy for dry hopping. And, you know, it just had this like beautiful Citra bouquet.
Uh-huh.
And he still talks to it about it this day. He's like, that was one of the best smelling beers I've ever had. I'm like, dude, it was probably garbage. You know?
Yeah. That's a lot of ounces
I'm
of
sure
hops.
Sure. There was tons of errors in that beer.
Sure.
With that, you know, we just started to brew together. And I was like, hey, why don't you come over to my place? And, you know, I'm doing extracts or whatever. And then a friendship kind of kindled. And we were, you know, going out after work, going to different like beer centric brew pubs and trying different types of beers. And we talked about like, wouldn't it be cool if we could start a brewery? And, you know, after a few months of doing extracts, we just knew that we had to do something different. And I came to him and I said, you know, I've been thinking about it. Are you willing to, you know, invest, you know, X amount of dollars into really doing this? And this was in 2012.
Okay.
End of 2012, 2013.
Right.
And he's like, yeah, I'm in. And, you know, to be honest with you, I didn't even really know this guy. And I mean, I had known him for 4 months. But I had this really just good feeling about this person that, you know, I had tried doing things in the past with other people and it just didn't work out. And I just had this feeling like we're going to own a brewery one day.
Yeah.
And we took his garage and we gutted it and down to the studs and we put up drywall. We put up ventilation. We bought a Brewmagic rim system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
And bought, you know, a couple fridges off of Craigslist, a couple conical fermenters, like 15 gallons. And for the next 5 years, we brewed every Saturday.
Now,
just to get, you know, to try to brew something as commercially, like on that level as a commercial beer as possible.
So you went, and you went from extract to gutting this man's garage.
Yeah, it's pretty drastic.
Yeah,
we both worked in advertising, and we had to get out of it. We were we worked for like, you know, Hollywood, and it was just we were both not happy, and we're like, what are two dudes in the middle 30s going to do? Like, we weren't going to start over, so we just started doing something that we were both very, very passionate about it.
Yeah, the Hollywood advertising machine, huh?
Yeah, it's yeah. I've always said it. The entertainment industry punches you in the face, and you say thank you.
Yeah, it's like a swimming with sharks, the classic, you know,
yeah.
Guy
yeah,
just gets exactly. Mauled and loves it. Yeah, you know, I have a couple friends in advertising and they absolutely hate it. Actually, one of them, I think, got out. They're just, it's like, it's just not a, you have to be bred for that, I think.
Yeah, I think you have to, you know, the thing with me and as a creative director of the company, you know, I mean, you know, I was a creative director and like a vice president of an ad agency. And, you know, I'd work on like the Batman movie and somebody would be like, oh my God, I can't believe you're working on Batman. I'd be like, eh. You know, I mean, Christopher Nolan isn't saying, oh dude, sky's the limit. Just go after it. You know, just do whatever you want. We're open. I mean, it's very, very, you know, very, very strict and they already have a plan in place. So you're really just a production machine and, you know, starting, you know, paperback and being able to really do what we want to do and kind of create our own message and have fun with it. It's been really like creatively liberating. So
I could imagine, I mean, especially because, you know, as a creative, you have ideas and you think they would be really great. And you're constantly pitching, man, this would be great. This is how it should go. This is how it should look. And everyone else is like, nope, we got to do it because of numbers or because of, you know, focus groups or whatever.
Yep.
The beer isn't really like that. You can sort of ride the vibe
right.
And go, okay, well, this just didn't work because we didn't get as many likes or something, I guess. I don't know, whatever. Who cares? The beer's gone. Let's do something else now.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, at paperback, we had, we put out over 40 beers. We had 40 labels in our first year during the pandemic. And, you know, we obviously have an in-house art team, me.
Sure.
And yeah. So it was very easy. And I, you know, it's nice when you can, you know, create something and it's not so precious. I mean, you know, everything that Zambo does is liquid art, and we just want the label to represent what he creates, you know, and you know, it's nice, you know, we've brewed beers that we did 30 barrels of, and then we never touched it again for whatever reason, whether it's not the time or we weren't happy with it, you know, to the extent that we wanted to try something different. So it's been nice that you really don't have anybody breathing down your neck telling you that you need to do this or you need to do that. It's just, again, it's just extremely liberating.
I imagine it's also different because you're not trying to re-up that same image in like an advertising cycle. And I don't pretend to know how advertising works for the most part. I mean, I get the general amount of it, but you know, there's, it can live in its space and that's it. And it can live in people's minds when they had that beer. Hey, that beer was really great. And you can tick up, tick a box off on an app or whatever, and then remember it. But for the most part, it's sort of, it's meant to go away. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that's even a little bit more impactful for people.
Yeah. I think there's like, you know, I definitely see with our beer, there's people who want to collect the labels, and there's like, you know, if it's going away, they want to make sure that they grab it, you know, or we'll do a limited edition t-shirt where we put the art on it. And we've done a couple labels with Zambo's face. Those do very well.
well, of course. I mean,
yeah. I mean,
look at that guy.
So, you know, yeah, I think there's definitely, it lends itself more into a cult following, whereas, you know, with advertising, you know, there's, you know, Warner Brothers or whatever studio puts a lot of money into making sure that they have a plan for their campaigns. And, you know, they put a lot of money into that one movie poster that you're going to see, you know? So it's really like, oh, how can we reiterate this? You know, where, you know, I'm doing stuff now we did for Black Friday, you know, again, I date myself on some of the references, but, you know, we did like a Black Flag poster, you know, for Black Friday, or, I did a Twin Peaks thing where, you know, a lot of our, servers who are a little bit younger than me, didn't really get the reference, but you know,
isn't that the worst? It is,
we have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, where you're just like, oh man, I love this classic like cult thing that got a resurgence, which in my opinion wasn't as good as the originals. But anyway,
yeah.
And then other people are like, the Red Room. I don't get it.
Yeah.
What's a log?
Like, why is this? Yeah, who's this guy in the red suit dancing? I'm like, don't worry about it.
Yeah,
it's good.
For me,
it's delicious.
Yeah, for me, a log lady is something completely different. I just, you know, it's not even a thing. So anyway, back. So you got this man's garage. You guys dump a bunch of money into All Grain system. Had you done All Grain before, or was it just extract? And literally, now we're in a rim system, and we're just flying blind.
Yeah, it was. It was all extract, and then we went into the rim system, and you know, 2013 now. So I think that the stuff we were built out by probably about May of 2013. Okay. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of text on the internet about this stuff, you know, like we had a horrible time. I mean, I always tell people who are starting homebrewing now, it's like, I'll sit down with you and tell you what we did wrong in 1 hour, and you'll learn a ton. And, you know, we didn't know about oxidation for a year and a half and how to control it. You know, we were pumping, you know, beer from the fermenter into the kegs with like oxygen. I mean, we just didn't know what we were doing, you know, and it was a lot of reading. And once it started to pick up, we kind of understood about, I was really into water chemistry. I was always into like the science of everything. So, you know, we started, you know, creating our own water profiles, which we do at paperback, using 100% RO water. We went to UC Davis and did a certification class. We went to White Labs and did all that stuff. So we definitely put a lot of time into, you know, into brewing and understanding the craft of it. You know, we always wanted, and I would hope Zambo would agree, we just didn't want to, we knew we would eventually hire a brewmaster.
Yep.
We just wanted to be able to talk to him intelligently and not have him think that we're stupid or an idiot or something. Like, what are these two owners asking me to do?
You know? Right. Yeah. I think that's cool. When you got the rim system and you're doing all these classes, it was with the intent of opening a brewery eventually one day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we didn't know when or how we were going to do it. So from there, we, you know, I think around 2017, one of our partners who I used to work for, we were out in Vegas and we were talking. We were on a business trip, and I said, you know, look at this is what we've been doing and everything. And he was a big beer fan, and we came back to them and did like a 8-hour presentation. We put a whole like business plan together. We did a whole like projections of where we saw the company going. I had mocked up a lot of the artwork and stuff, like what paperback was going to be. We had already trademarked the name. So we had a pretty cohesive plan put into place. And then we, you know, some of the beers were still battling with oxidation. We could just never really get that oxidation on a, like a home brewer's level, like out, you know?
Yeah.
And
it's hard, man.
We scheduled the meeting. So we had all these beers that were just ready, and we just like went the morning, bottled them, and then brought them. So they were all fresh.
Smart.
And, you know, they tried them and they were like, these are great, you know, and like, we want to do this. And then it was 3.5 years of getting all that stuff together, finding the location.
Yeah. What kind of beers did you bring? Like what styles? Do you remember?
Yeah, we brought a cream ale. We brought a stout. We brought a like a hoppy pale ale, and we brought an IPA and a hazy.
Okay, that's a pretty good lineup, I think.
Yeah, it's just it happened to work out great. So,
what kind of styles were you brewing when you guys were home brewing? Would you have like a couple key ones that you really gravitated to, or was it just like everybody? We're going to work through the BJCP guidelines. From 1A to whatever the hell's at the bottom.
It was focused on IPAs and hazies. Okay. Like everything was just just trying to figure out how to get that hazy the haziest we could. Like we were trying all different types of things and then exploring, you know, we would get a recipe for a, you know, a red or whatever. Those always turned out fine, but it was always the IPAs and working with those different hops and, you know, and then the hazies and the water profiles that were just always, it was just the thorn in our side. It was something that we loved to drink a lot. The West Coast IPAs, we're big fans of those. And
sure.
You'll see at paperback, we have a lot of West Coast IPAs.
Yeah.
But it was just that thorn in our side that we just had to perfect it. And it was time consuming.
Did you ever do it on the homebrew level?
Yeah, I think once we kind of started building up the building, Brandon and I kind of stopped.
Okay.
Once we knew we were getting a Zambo, we were kind of like, you know what? This guy's got it from here, you know? So I think we had a couple good ones. You know, we leave it to Zambo now. Like that was the thing when we always say with, you know, Zambo is, you know, Brandon and I have brewer's knowledge. He has practical brewer's knowledge. Like he has so much experience. He just knows where I don't, you know, I know what hops I like personally and how to, you know, put them together. But Zambo just knows like, dude, I've been doing this for 20 years. And if you mix this and this, it's going to taste like crap. You know,
he's got street smarts. Zambo, you got street smarts.
Street smarts.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, even Walt Disney was like, look, I can't draw for shit. I'm going to hire people who do it better than me.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and, you know, I mean, Brandon and I, we did discuss being the brewers at a point, and we don't have enough time just doing the day to day now. I can't imagine being a brewer too.
No, hell no. No, you got to step away. So you pick a location. Where did you end up?
Glendale. So now we were looking for a spot. We had a realtor. He came to us. He had found an old Quonset hut that was brought up from Long Beach in 1949. It was currently a machine shop.
Are those like hot, like rounded metal structures?
Like an airplane hangar.
Yep.
Type of deal.
Okay. All right.
It's about 6,000, a little less than 6,000 square feet. And we just fell in love with it. It was amazing. Yeah. And like, we're like, what an interesting place to put a brewery. And it kind of felt, you know, we knew our style for paperback was going to be a little bit mid-century and kind of, you know, your cool uncle's basement type of vibe, you know, and we
not creepy uncle, cool uncle.
Not creepy. You know, that the uncle that listens to Led Zeppelin and, you know,
and Black Flag
and machine there, nothing weird. Yeah. But we just fell in love with this space and it was perfect. It was walkable and there was, you know, apartment buildings going up around the corner and it was in a great part of town. And, it was really the city of Glendale, was very instrumental in making that happen. They actually found the building, gave it to our realtor. I met with the economic development program and they pretty much assured, wink, wink, that it was going to be cleared for a CUP. And I was very concerned about that, you know, and, you know, we went through the process and they were very accommodating. They really wanted a brewery in that area. They really want to, you know, get that area. Like, just it's about 2 miles away from like the Americana, which is kind of like a big shopping plaza type of thing.
Okay.
And, you know, they just wanted to bring some kind of cool stuff to Glendale. So it worked out really well.
Excellent. What's the story behind the paperback name?
So my partner and I, Brandon, had a bunch of different names, and I knew that I was the guy that was going to have to design on the labels and do the artwork and everything. So I really needed something that was like had a creative vehicle behind it that could kind of really drive or a vehicle behind it that could drive the creativity.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we battled with a bunch of different stuff. At first, we were we had a name that you couldn't even pronounce. So that didn't last very long.
What was it?
We had The Outsiders, which we thought was kind of cool because we were kind of outside of the industry.
Okay.
But that got turned down by copyright because there was an outsider. The trademark came back, denied us on that because there was an outsider for like cider, you know,
cider.
Hard cider.
Okay. I mean, which makes sense, but maybe a little too on the nose.
Yeah. Yeah. kind of came up, we had a list about 100 names, and I came up with paperback on a vacation, and I was like, oh, I could just kind of really paperback book covers could really be anything, you know?
Yeah.
And that could be really cool. And then I started refining it a little bit, and I wasn't really too into it, but Brandon kept saying like, you know, I kind of dig it, man. Like, I think it'd be really cool, you know? So it stuck and we just kind of went with it.
Yeah. It is very like, I don't say nondescript, but it is almost like a package. It can be anything, and you can sort of go anywhere with the label art. And right. I do really, the first thing I was pulling out the cans of the box, and the label art just struck me immediately. I was like, wow, this is like, there's a lot of personality in your label art. And if I'm getting the terminology right, it's sort of like the pulp, paperback covers and all that kind of funky stuff.
Yeah, it's part of the inspiration of, you know, paperback are those pulp cover, you know, the pulp book covers. And it was kind of like a untamed and wild time when those books were coming out. And, you know, I mean, obviously we're a little bit more PC with some of our stuff, but we definitely try to be somewhat unapologetic and push the envelope a little bit.
Well, I'm thirsty. I'm going to open this beer, and the first beer I'm going to open was the first beer I pulled out of the box, and instantly I was like, I think I love these people. It's called Czechs Who Wear Leather.
Yeah.
And here's the can for everyone watching. And it's just like a lot of leather got people in leather suits and gimps, yeah. I guess, if you will. Yep. And I was like, the sort of balls it takes to put this on a label and be like, yeah, this is my beer. What do you think?
That was a crazy photo shoot day, man. We all had a great
time. Well, I don't know how you got that red.
It still fits.
Yeah, yeah.
The pandemic hasn't cost you your vinyl suit or your leather suit form, and I appreciate that for you.
He wears it well.
He really does.
All in the pecs.
Yeah.
That's right. You got to carry it well, man.
Yeah, yeah, there's no safe word when it comes to Pilsner.
It should just be Zambo.
Yeah.
Look at that. Guy has nipple clamps, for God's sake. How do you, what's wrong with you guys over there? How do you come with Czechs Who Wear Leather? I mean, it is a bold move, I think. Like you said, it's a little bit more of a PC time, especially back from like the 40s. But, you know, have you gotten any pushback from this, or anybody was like, wow, that's a little, I don't know, guys, this is a little weird? Or do people just love it?
I mean, I think people get it. I've heard like a lot of people are like, oh, okay, I see how the collective of paperback works. Like when you see all the labels, it's kind of like a comedian, you know, when they tell some stuff on stage and it's like, oh, that's part of the shtick. That's not who they are. Like it's all very cohesive when it's together, you know? And, I think there is people want, again, I don't think anything that we do is mean spirited. It's just kind of fun and it's stupid and silly. You know, that's what we want to do is we're either making some sort of social commentary. We had one called Everyday Zombies, where it's like people as zombies on their cell phone walking through the streets of Los Angeles. And, we do all kinds of different types of stuff, but a lot of it's just using, you know, cultural like references. We classify our artwork more as pop art than like kind of pulp art because we're typically making commentary on, you know, cultural and society norms.
With that sort of mid-mod pulpy vibe to it.
Yeah, with
which is, it's great. I mean, I think you guys are right. There's definitely a lot you can do. Clearly, I mean, you've taken that style, put it towards modern commentary, and it works clearly. Mm-hmm. I think that's neat. You know, there's nothing.
Yes, thank you.
There's nothing like an idea that just doesn't work. Like after the fifth labor, like I can't. I don't know. I'm stuck. I can't do anything else anymore. You know what I mean? Yeah. So okay, so you got the space. Glendale helped you out. That's really great to hear. I like it when cities are active in bringing breweries in and don't hold them back. Far too many times we've heard the opposite of that, where it's just like 18 months of the city going, yeah, I don't know. When was this? What year was this?
We got the building in 2017. We started then we were, you know, designing and doing some other stuff with the building, and plan check started 2018, right before 19. So December of 18, I believe. And then it was a year and a half. We hired Zambo in 2019 of December, right? Zambo?
Perfect. All right. Excellent. Just the time to start a new job.
Yeah, my first walk through the door, they weren't there. Someone had left it unlocked.
And, sounds about right.
Yeah, there was still an awful lot of dirt ground inside.
Oh, no. They left it for you. Here's instructions on how to use the cement mixer. And
well, that was an interview. I hadn't even been hired yet. So this is my first impression. I see. But there was brand new stainless steel there.
But, I mean, is that sort of – I feel like that's sort of not untypical, because I don't think that's a word, but you know, I don't think it's sort of like out of the norm for startup breweries.
The floors are always a big surprise for new people. You know, this is city requirements and all that kind of stuff, but you almost always have to redo the floor in places that don't, you know, like the older places that got grandfathered in, you know, if you work there, because the water doesn't flow towards the drain, it pools up in the corners.
Yeah.
Oh man. So you got in there December. We all know what happened in March. The lockdown. How did that just thoroughly screw your plans?
It made us reinvent ourselves. Really, we call it the pandemic pivot, where you know we thought we were going to be a tasting room and have, you know, we'd eventually get into canning, and you know, those labels weren't even really an idea yet. We had one beer that we canned, an IPA, and then we had four other beers that we were pouring as growlers. And at that time we had kind of went through the place and, you know, we did all the 8 feet apart and the face shields and all that kind of stuff. And then we had sent out a direct mail thing like, hey, welcome to the, we're in the neighborhood, like come visit us for $2 off a draft or whatever. And then we just got it was on the news, like everything shutting down.
Oh, right after those,
we were able to sell from our door. You know, we opened the door and just had a little table there and sell beer to go. And we had a nice reception of friends and stuff and people supporting. But after that, it was just pouring crowlers and that was getting very exhausting. So we just decided to keg everything. I mean, can everything. Stuff is still in fermenters and bright tanks. So we canned everything, and then we just realized that, you know, we have this ability to kind of create a ton of labels, and just Zambo's, you know, great beer making had all these recipes, and we just started to churn out recipes and just do different styles and different types of IPAs and experimental stuff, and just canned it and then sold it, you know, and we just spent all of our resources now just focusing on wholesale and really the to-go business aspect of it, the retail aspect was very secondary.
Yeah. And, you know, I feel like the modern craft beer drinker wants to tick those boxes. They want to go, what else is new? What else is new? But when the pandemic hit and breweries were like, hey, we really need your support, I think that was maybe kicked into overdrive a little bit.
Yeah.
And I sort of feel, because a lot of breweries who had to go through this that we've talked to were very much like, we actually had a sort of an uptick. Mm-hmm. Because people were very much supportive and we were doing so much that it brought people, you know, to our doors more often than they would have normally.
Yeah.
You see,
and there was
like
a lot
that?
Of, there was a lot of drinking at home going on too,
yeah.
You know, in Southern California, and a lot of people were looking for, you know, craft beer that was fresh, and, you know, we weren't brewing, you know, we were doing anywhere from 15 to 30 barrels. So, you know, maybe, you know, 200 cases here or whatever, and just kind of shooting it out the door, you know? So it was all fresh. It was all different.
Well, sounds great. Sounds great.
Still is, Chris.
What's that?
It still is.
It was great,
it's all
but
fresh and different.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Now it's just the same shit. What size system did you guys open with?
Well, we have a 15 barrel brew house, 6 30 barrel tanks, and 6 60 barrel tanks.
Man, that, I don't know. That's ambitious, I feel like. I mean, you guys went from extract to a rim system to a 15 barrel, like, I don't know. I guess maybe not. I don't know. Zambo, is that? My stats for what breweries usually open with are like stuck in the 7 barrel realm. Like anything over 7 barrels, I'm like, wow, that's amazing. But 15, is 15 the norm? 10, 15 sort of now what people are doing?
You know, it's never enough.
Okay. Well,
you know,
yeah, all right.
There'll be surges where, you know, you need a lot more beer, and then there'll be something so experimental. You're like, man, I wish I could just make 2 barrels of this. And that's why we still have the room system over at the brewery. We also have a little fermenter we call Rogue One. Holds 1 barrel, which we filled today with an experimental holiday beer that maybe Chris will talk about in a little while if you coax him to enough.
Okay, well, we can try that.
But
we can
yes,
try
that. Two of those 60s actually came a few months ago, so we did not have all that when we first opened. It was just a factor of we need to make more and get it out there because, you know, people want it.
And you're already expanding. That's great. That's cool, man. I'm drinking this Czech Pilsner.
Now I have to figure out where to put it all because, you know, the stores take deliveries at different days and there's only so much we can put in the taste where people can't get to the bathroom.
Sorry, you can't go to the bathroom. You have beer in the way. You got to drink your way to the bathroom.
That's right.
Well, I'm drinking this Czech Pils. Can you tell me a little bit about this? This is it's a very hoppy, aggressive Czech style Pilsner. I love it.
Yes.
Tastes great.
The more typical or traditional hopping would be the Saaz hop from the Czech Republic, S-A-A-Z. It's actually pronounced Zatz, but nobody knows that but us. That hop was grown in New Zealand under a name Mochuka. Well, we're told that's what it's pronounced by a Kiwi, but it's spelled Motueka. So probably most of us are still calling it that.
Motueka, yeah, for sure.
Saaz derivative that was grown on New Zealand soil. So that's another way of experimenting. This beautiful floral aroma hop in that Bohemian Pilsner. It just showcases it. It's so easy to enjoy and has a beautiful aroma. So yeah, we're pretty happy with that one. That was our first lager, I believe. You know, we did a Kolsch that we still do on a seasonal basis, but yeah, I believe that was our first lager and we've done a few since then. Lagers, I mean, you know, aren't as common in startup breweries because they take up your tank space longer. So
I know,
when you
but
start
I
w- to hit capacity, you have to make trade-offs if you're going to put a lager in there.
I wish they were, man. I really do. And the lagers are just so awesome. But yeah, I mean, you know, that hop is cool, and I never really thought about using the traditional derivatives in a beer like that.
Sure.
So you can sort of get some of that earthiness. But it really works well with the phenols from the yeast, and then you do sort of have that. I don't know. Would you classify Motueka as like a tropical, or is it more like I can't really tell.
There's a lightly fruity note to it, and some of that is the sweetness of Bohemian Pilsner malt as well helps accentuate that. But I think a lot of it is just the adventure of trying something that sounds like a very foreign name. If they had called it New Zealand Saaz, we probably would not have bought it because, I mean, who wants? I mean, honestly, when they first started growing hops down there, they grew a lot of American varietals. I remember, do you want New Zealand Centennial? I'm like, what, for twice the price of ours? No, I don't want that. I like our Centennial. It's great. So they were wise to recognize that growing in different soil is going to modify it a little bit, and they branded it themselves, and we got to bring that adventurous spirit back and put it into our beer. So I was glad that we managed to source some because when we opened, it was a lot more expensive. It's come down a bit, but it's still not a cheap hop. So
sure.
I'm lucky to work for guys that don't ask me to pinch pennies when it comes to recipes because that's why we get so much creative freedom and come up with these cool creations, you know?
Yeah. No, it tastes great, man. It tastes great. And at 4.9, it does not, or is it 4.8? I have my lighting so low to
it's
look cool.
No, it's
4.9. Okay. Yeah, it really is, man. These are the most important things. Yeah, it tastes good. And it is a very firm bitterness. It's I like it. That's a good lager, dude. I would drink that all day.
Thank you. Yeah, it's supposed to be a Pilsner. You know, it's not like an American light lager, which they sometimes call Pilsners as well. This is supposed to be like a traditional Bohemian Pilsner where it pops out a little more. I think the most common ones you'll see most breweries making are the German Pilsner,
mm-hmm.
when they do a craft Pilsner. And this is a little bit more complex. German Pilsners can start to taste the same after a while because you usually only use one of maybe two different hops, and they don't accentuate malt flavor as much. So I was excited that they didn't ask me to do a German Pils. They said, let's do a Bohemian. I'm like, great.
Why not? Is that the
they'd
benefit?
Already done the Czechs who wear leather labels, so we needed something.
You already had it. Where did the name come from?
At first, I thought we were going to do like a German Pilsner. So then I was thinking of like, you know, like German, like underground S&M scene. And then we were talking and Zam was like, no, it's going to be a Czech Pilsner. I'm like, all right, we'll just call it Czechs Who Wear Leather. Like, we have a stout called Communist Poodles from Connecticut. And
of course.
So we were designing a beer and we're talking about a stout and I wanted to name it Communist Poodles from Russia. And Zam was like, well, it's an American stout. I go, well, then make it from Connecticut. And then that was it.
Why Connecticut?
Why not?
That's a good question. I don't know.
They live in New Haven and, you know, they
have a backstory.
Yeah, they have a backstory.
Chris is from Boston. So I figured there was some kind of rivalry up there in the New England states.
Some Boston, New Haven rivalry that needs to. It's interesting. Yeah. Zambo says that Chris was the one who made it a Czech style. Chris says Zambo was the one who made it a Czech style. So maybe it's just lost in between.
Yeah, it's all blurry now. That was 50 years ago.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, man.
After a lot of sampling, too. So.
Oh, you got to do it. You got to do it. All right. Speaking of got to do it, I got to take a break. And then I want to come back and we'll jump into two more beers. And then maybe even drink some. Who knows? hang on just a sec, everybody. We'll be right back with Paperback Brewing here on The Session. Hold tight.
You're listening to The Brewing Network. Because like beer, radio shouldn't suck.
All right, thanks for sticking around, everybody. We have Chris and Zambo with Paperback in Glendale, California. Beautiful, sunny Glendale, California, where nothing ever goes wrong. And everything is always perfect and nice. Zambo, while I find some other beers, tell me about you, man. We last spoke with you. You were at the 21st Amendment crafting some awesome beers. Where'd you go after that, man?
Let's see. 21st Amendment was a great adventure. We were right by the stadium and managed to get three Giants championships while there. So had a great time.
Nice.
Had a brief stint at Speakeasy, the former Speakeasy before the ownership change. I was there for about a year. And then, my wife and I, who were married at 21st Amendment, by the way, by Sully himself, in the brew pub, he said it's the first and last wedding they'll ever have there. We decided we wanted to be closer to the water, and with all the housing increases in the Bay Area, that just wasn't going to happen. So we moved to Santa Barbara for a few years.
Oh, lovely.
It was fantastic. Worked for the first brewery, oldest brewery founded in Santa Barbara, Santa Barbara Brewing Company,
nice.
Who I should say the ill-fated Santa Barbara Brewing Company, because after the mudslides and fires, they didn't pull through.
Ooh.
After being open every day for 25 years. Yeah, it was an ugly, it was a big learning experience, but man, what a beautiful town. And it's where my son Cooper was born. And, you know, we just walked to the beach every day after, you know, I'm a 5 a.m. brewer. So right after lunch, I'm home. We're out. We're heading to the beach, heading to the zoo. So a few years there. And then Cooper was getting older and we needed some more hands-on experience. And our parents all live in L.A. And so we decided to make the move back here. But it was all a matter of finding the right match, the right people to work with.
Yeah,
that kind of had the same dreams of as us, you know, had to be congruent. So we took our time on that, talked to a lot of different people, and, you know, we found our match. It's not like online dating. It was really just sitting and talking to people, kind of learning more about yourself, about what you're really looking for. And interestingly enough, we landed here in Glendale, which is where my last non-brewing job was before I started with my first brewery, which was BJ's.
Oh, wow.
Back. So I was an LA brewer originally back in 2005. Yeah, that's how old I am.
Jeez. Good
yeah.
Lord,
so,
man.
Here we are, yeah, in glorious Glendale. We're actually right next to the mall, so this is the season of don't go outside.
How hard was it to sort of, you know, pry yourself away from just walking to the beach every day? I feel like that's just the California dream.
It was difficult, but, you know, there's different economies in LA and in San Francisco than there are in little beach towns. So
yeah,
we kind of had to take a realistic approach to it. But I mean, we're walkers. San Francisco turned us into walkers. We had visitors that couldn't keep up with us because of the hills. So here we can walk to the zoo, Griffith Park, you know, all kinds of hiking, beautiful views. And I can walk to work. That's what I fell in love with at 21st Amendment. I'm 1 mile from paperback. So
that's
occasionally
cool.
I walk.
That's cool. You mentioned something about, you know, finding a brewery that has the right fit and the right, you know, whatever. Is at your level of brewing, is it less of an interview and more of a, hey, let's see if we are cohabitable? Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of why I mentioned the dating thing, but it really is about compatibility. Chris and Brandon came up to Santa Barbara a few times, so I got to show them my places that I hang out. You know, it's not like a job interview where you sit in a room across a desk and talk to each other about where do you see yourself in 5 years.
And here's my resume.
What did you say 5 years ago? Did you say you'd be here? No. But yeah, so we went and tried beers together. We tore them up. We love some of them, but not a lot of them. And you get to know each other's tastes. You talk about what you're working on, not where you're going to be in 5 years, but whether you're going to be employed in 5 months. And, you know, eventually we got into timelines. It was maybe 2 months of conversations before we actually got into the nitty gritty of relocation and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, these guys were a lot of fun. And the lab, as they called it, the garage that they were brewing in, I had the privilege of helping relocate to paperback, and it was like a time capsule.
Yeah,
because we're digging into these corners, and I'm like, have you guys been here in a while? No, we don't go over there. Yeah. But you know, like unhooking stuff that they hooked up 8 years earlier, and like, I think I remember how to do this. Yeah, so we got it all onto a U-Haul. There's a lot of good photos of that. I don't know if they're on our.
Yeah, they're on Instagram
or anything like that. But
that's awesome.
Yeah, and then it all just kind of drove over. And then we kind of thinned that out when we needed bigger tank space. But we still have the key components of that original lab. It's kind of cool.
That's neat. And it's still in use, it sounds like.
We use it today, actually, for this this holiday project that Chris wanted to do.
Nice. Okay.
And tomorrow we're actually brewing communist poodles, so it's funny you brought it up. I mean, you don't brew a stout every week.
No. I wish you could, though. I don't know. Something about market and what it will bear. I don't know. I don't pay attention.
I know. Yeah, there's always some guy who comes and goes, oh, you got a stout, but no porter.
Yeah. Hey, asshole, 1996 call. They want you back. But that would be also me. I would just think it, though. I wouldn't say it. So I'm going to get into a beer here. This one is called Under Pressure. Tales from Down the River. What can you tell me about this?
And so Under Pressure was actually really fun. This is, you know, all beers go through an evolution for a brewer. And I won't say that any of our beers are a copy of any brew I made before, but this particular pale ale is near and dear to my heart. When the guys just kind of gave me full freedom on, they're just doing American pale ale, they trust you. I mean, how bad could it be? This one is an evolution of a beer I did in San Francisco called Five South Pale Ale that was dedicated to the spirit of migration. It was the very first beer I brewed on my very first day at 21st Amendment. And it had classic sea hops. And it was very popular. It was brewed by brewers after I left there as well. And I wanted to do some iteration of that, but not try to claim that it's that beer. So in homage, I did mimic the San Francisco water profile for that beer because I was trying to get that flavor back. And we have that privilege because, as Chris mentioned, we're 100% RO water. So that was kind of cool to create the Hetch Hetchy water. And then, you know, we modernized it a little bit. There's some Simcoe in there, classic Vinny favorite. You know, Southern California did a little, beers are a little bit drier up north, or they were actually when I was up there. I don't know how they are now, but this allows some of the malt still to come through as well. And it's just got all kinds of beautiful aromas coming through.
Yeah, it's there's a lot going on in there, man. Trying to get the aroma. I'm a little stuffy.
Centennial, so. Some Simcoe, a little bit of Chinook. Someone might call it an old fashioned beer if that was the only description you got, and that's why I mentioned that it is a redesign. It is the evolution of something I did in the past, but this is more what people in whatever year this is would like to drink.
Yeah, it is very a little old schooly, I think, because it is sort of has some crystal malt flavors going on. But I like that personally. I like you have that malt coming through, a little bit toasty, but not too much. But there's a ton of hops, and the bitterness drives it up. That's the modernization, I think. If I was tasting this, I'd be like, oh, this definitely sort of takes the best of both worlds a little bit too. Because what I don't like is a pale ale that's just like one dimensional in the malt. You know, it's like like West Coast IPA, it's kind of got there for a little bit where it's like it's just. Here it is. Sure. You barely even taste the malt, and it's just all about the hops when we were still trying to figure out what that style meant, I think. But pale ale sort of got that way too. And I like this more, more malt roundness in the mouthfeel.
Yeah. I think it is kind of my go-to when I know I'm actually driving and not walking from work. But I think everyone got excited about all the newer tropical hops that were grown in America, kind of as a response to the tropical hops coming out of Australia and New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And those ended up in IPAs and pale ales and everything else. And to some people, like classic Cascade, for example, almost got like a bad name. You know, it's one of the most grown hops by hop growers, and there's a reason for that. It has a beautiful aroma, it has awesome oils in it, and so I think sometimes it's nice to celebrate the citrus notes that kind of created the American pale ale, which created the American IPA. And the Simcoe adds a little bit of tropical touch, but still it's a celebration of the classic pale ale, and in the Southern California way.
Yeah, and it's that hop flavor that is sort of intriguing, because you do have a little bit of that tropicalness, but there is some of that old school, some earthy characters to it, and it is very, it sort of makes you think, doesn't it? It's like a fortune cookie. Yeah, right. But it is like if you sat down like a lot of beer geeks like to do and wanted to analyze this beer, you could really go to town on it, because it is there's a complex aroma for a pale ale. You don't really expect that.
Yeah, we go over the top on late additions and dry hopping. Again, kudos to Chris and Brandon for letting me blow their money on that. the aromas are very important to us in all of our beers.
It needs a warm up.
Even our American light lager that we make, Backyard Crusher, has a pre-prohibition style to it that adds some of the grainy, grainy Pilsner malt notes to it. Six row. Malt. Man. And
don't threaten me with
it. About hops, but yes, there should be complexity in the aroma just as in the flavor. And balance, I was told by a salesperson once that balance is a conservative word, and I'm like, well, I understand that. I know we want to take chances and stuff, but in the end, balance is what allows all the flavors to come together. So I don't consider it a bad word. I think you can push balance to any edge of the envelope, but there should always be some harmony between all of the flavors and aromas that you're experiencing.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. And, if he's trying to say like all the beer should be, one dimensional or one four, like hop forward or, malt or whatever, I think you can still have one or two of those in a profile. But for the most part, this is what makes beer enjoyable. There's a lot of flavors and how they interplay with one another. I mean, that's how we sold craft beer in the 90s anyways, right? It's like, this has more flavor than a Budweiser. And if you cover up those flavors by picking one to shoot for, then it's just sort of like, then what are we doing? I say we like I'm, like I have a brewery or whatever. What's the malt bill on this? Zambo, what's the malt on here?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. There's some English crystal malt in there.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Not a ton, no, just a little bit. You'll notice the color is not as deep as your classic Sierra Nevada. It's enough to kind of give a dance floor for the hops to shine through.
It's just actually like a hair shadier or a hair darker than your pills.
Yeah. We made it pretty light. You know, there are ways to get melanoidins and crystal malt flavors in there without changing the color too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without getting to the specifics, like a lot of the early pale ales, they're like, well, I could use 10 pounds of C60 or 20 pounds of C30. And I'd be like, okay, then use the 20 pounds of C30 because the C60, I mean, while those balance out in color, the C60 gives you a much more caramel forward note that will be noticeable in something as light as a pale ale. You know, granted, I'm pretty sure C60 is what Sierra Nevada uses, but they use, you know, a small percentage of it. And, I bring them up because I was the home brewer for 13 years before I was even professional. I started as a teenager. So Sierra Nevada was the quintessential pale ale back then.
Yeah.
It was the one we could get. I was in Georgia, for crying out loud.
Oh, man.
So it's what it was. And it was just classic sea hops and, you know, light C60 kind of caramelly pale ale.
Ken had a thing for C's, man. Just anything C. There's a C in the ingredient, put it in my fucking beer right now. Well, yeah, and I laugh when you bring it up because it is sort of, that's the default example of pale ale. Not only what pale ale was, but what it can actually still be. I mean, they haven't really changed. So we have all these iterations of pale ale where they run the gamut of, you know, flavor contributions from the malt and the hops and too bitter, not bitter enough, and, you know, really roasty and not. But pale ale sort of just been, Sierra Nevada pale ale is just what it is.
It and people is. Come and, back know, it was to interesting. It over and Until over. Until I actually visited Chico, I never knew that their draft and their packaged product are two different beers.
Right. Yes.
They have different alcohol levels. Yeah.
That's wild to me, man.
Yeah.
I like this beer, man. How is if you had to put a style to Glendale, what do people down there drink more than anything? Is it an IPA town or is it sort of a mixed bag?
I'd say, go ahead, Chris.
No, go ahead, Samuel.
I mean, I think people who go to a craft brewery generally are going to taste hops in general. If they bring a friend who's not a beer drinker, that's why we have all the other options, including our more fun, newer stuff.
That's a fair point. I love asking these questions because I generally get different answers, and that's a pretty good one.
Have you ever gone to a craft brewery and not tried their IPA?
Yeah. Well, yes, but I'm the unicorn who, like, I don't drink IPAs. So I go like, I don't really, I would be like, where's the porter? Do you have a porter?
Or like the seltzers.
You're that old English guy.
Yes. Speaking of English. Yeah. If you had a mild, that's all I would just be sipping on that. Like a
nice
on a bottle. But I know what you mean where it is very much like, you're going there and an IPA is sort of the display, the mannequin in the window of the department store or whatever. Like, this is what we offer. This is the example of the IPA. And then anything else you can find, we have all that shit too, but This is what we do right here.
So we try to have a really good spread. It did start off and we kind of realized it as we were rolling that all of our beers were very light in color and kind of getting similar. And then they finally asked me to do what I love to do was a red. And we have Satan Wears Pajamas as our red and it came out fantastic. And we've got a couple other tricks up our sleeve, but along with a classic IPA, we do hazies, our double hazy, which you're going to taste soon.
Mm-hmm.
And then the milkshake IPAs, which just like came out of nowhere. And, you know, it's a stretch of the word IPA, but it is a celebration of hops in harmony with other fruits and different flavors. So we've done four of those now, Chris, something like that.
Yeah. We just did the fourth one.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we like to, if people walk to, as far as your question was, what do people in Glendale drink? There's only three places to go for craft beer, really. And we're one of them. Other one's just up the street, Glendale Tap. And then there's one on the other side of town. But you know, there's a baseball crowd somewhat. We're not far from Dodger Stadium. And of course, most of them are drinking the light beers. And yep. Our blonde ale is just, it's our best seller there. It's a killer. Nice. And we since then have created a couple of lighter lagers, and we have a Kolsch too. And so the sports fans all love those kind of beers because they can just keep drinking them as they eat whatever the food truck has brought.
Yeah.
And still be fine.
Absolutely.
But then I got to tell you, when the sales guys come back from a trip and they're like, someone keeps asking, when are you going to make such and such again? And then when do you make such and such? And I look at them all and I listen, I'm like, those are all the 10% alcohol beers. We're still going to ask for that. When are you going to get me hammered again, man?
Yeah.
So, yeah, a little bit for everybody, okay. I think.
That's good, man.
Our funnest hammer that people keep asking about was a collaboration with Common Space called Magic Mindbender.
Ooh.
And it had coconut in it. It was a coconut imperial IPA at 10% alcohol. If you're not familiar, Common Space's brewmaster is Kushal, who was from Speakeasy right before me.
Nice.
Yeah, so he's the brewer, Kushal Hall, and we have been friends ever since. We've done a couple collaborations, so it was really fun to move down here and invite him up to do this collaboration that everybody wants more of now.
An imperial IPA with coconut?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I think you're broken somehow. That seems weird. Who would do that? How'd it come out?
But a lot of people want more. And they've just invited us down to brew down there. So we'll be there next week brewing a new collaboration. I don't want to let it out of the bag until Kushal's ready. But
yeah, for sure.
We'll see that in about a month.
That sounds cool, man. That sounds funky as hell. All right, what's next? I guess I'm thinking Tucked In by Strangers, which is the West Coast IPA.
That's what I'm having.
Okay, well, let's do that. Tell me about... Tucked In by Strangers. Every time I see this person in particular on the can right there, I laugh. It's just like the person holding the teddy bear. And, you know, for those of you not looking, actually, you should look up all these can labels. They're great. But, you know, it's like the classic 50s. Like, I'm a robber. I have a striped shirt on and a beanie and a mask. And it's great. It's perfect.
Yeah, we had that one has a newish label that some people thought that was a little creepy. So we pulled back a little bit. And the idea was that they just break in to tuck you in. They're not doing anything. They just want to make sure that you get a good night's sleep. That was
I appreciate
it's uncomfortable.
That. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you change on it? How'd you change it?
We made it more of like a buddy. Like people had problems with the teddy bear. So we took the teddy bear out, but he pops up in a lot of our other comics and labels.
There's a couple of Easter eggs in Chris's labels that are really cool. If you really get into his art, you'll see some tie-ins. It's kind of fun.
With other labels you guys have done?
Correct.
Yeah.
Nice. I like that. That's good. Yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with it. I think it's great. I think it's pretty funny, especially because the kid is freaked out as hell. Nice haircut.
So this is a single hop beer, I've had a lot of terrible single hop beers in the day. We did some pilot of this and then just nailed it with this hop. It's, you know, hop selection is key to do a single hop. Not every hop is designed for it, but we also use some Pilsner malt just to lighten up the malt base in this case and really let the hop shine through, but don't overbitter it so that you're really getting the flavor and aroma of the Mosaic hop. We got a gold medal for this at the California Craft Brewers Cup this year.
Nice. Congrats, man. This has a good sweetness level to it, but it's not like a residual sweetness. It doesn't feel like a, just like an unfermented sweetness. It's like a malt sweetness, or I almost want to say a hop sweetness. And I imagine that's just the magic that you're doing with the hops and then the flavor additions.
A little bit. Yeah. Very high mash temperature to keep it from over attenuating. When you use Pilsner malt and hardly any colored malts at all, the yeast just want to chew through the whole thing. And then all that's going to be left is, you know, that hop bitterness. So mash in very hot and just low initial additions and huge late additions. Again, someone else is paying for it.
I get the feeling that if you had your brewery, it would just be just one ingredient.
Oh, Cascade.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, I just sell hops.
This is our go-to. We've all really loved this. We've done some other little modifications of it on the pilot system for fun, but we still end up back loving Tucked In by Strangers. And if Chris didn't mention it, some of it's on its way to the Bay Area tomorrow.
Oh, that's right. You guys are distributing it up here. Is that new?
Yeah. So that starts tomorrow, and we're sending up 4 or 5 SKUs up there. Nice. And we're just really excited to, you know, kind of branch out. We've been pretty much focusing on from Santa Barbara down to San Diego so far. And now we're kind of pushing up northward to get some of the beer into
San
into the
hands of anything with a saint associated with it, basically.
That's right. Well, welcome. Hopefully it goes well anywhere. So it's San Francisco Bay Area just in general. I know you can't, I guess, technically say exactly where, but ask for it, I guess, everybody.
Yeah, can you Sacramento, Oakland, I believe.
Sacramento, Oakland. That's a big.
There's a find at our beer on our website. Is that right, Chris?
Not those places yet. But okay. If you're in LA, you can.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm sure as we get our roots entrenched up there, we'll get that updated.
I don't know.
We snuck a few up there. We had some at City Beer, places that I used to go. They asked, "Look, we're going to drive one truck up. Where should we go?" So. Yeah, there's a couple of my old stomping ground spots that it ended up at.
Okay.
I was excited to send a note to all my friends and say, go try it. Try it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's great. I mean, this beer is, you know, from a non really IPA guy, I really like it. I'm noticing a trend with your beers is that I'm having a hard time just describing them because they have a lot of layers to them. And I know that just seems like I'm blowing smoke up your ass, which I might be, but it's also true. Like to me, this beer is, it's very soft, but obviously not in like a hazy IPA way. It's not harsh. There's some sweetness to it. You can taste the malt to it. It's not overly bitter, but the flavor hops sort of carry everything. They merge really, really well with the malt flavors. And it's just all in all, a well-rounded IPA with some bitterness there at the end. It's not too aggressive. In fact, it might be even a little bit, restrained, I guess, because of that sweetness. And I really like it. And I don't like that about myself, that I'm starting to say that, and I don't, it's just not something I really enjoy saying, but this beer is a very good, easy drinking IPA.
So if you don't mind, we're going to use that whole sentence you just said on the back of our label next
Please
time.
Do. Yeah, watch your sales crater. Like, who said that? Whatever.
Everything but restrained. We'll use the rest.
Mm. Is that a bad word? Did I say a bad word?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I think one of the things about Zambo that's great is that he has this ability to make low ABV beers nice and full, like you're drinking like a 7.5, and then beers that are 11 feel like you're drinking a 7.5. So it works both ways. We have a robot strip club, which is a 10.5% hazy double, and it drinks like it's a 6.8. It's nuts.
Robot strip club.
Yeah.
For a second there, I thought you were like serious, like you had like a robe, because it's LA, right? And I feel like maybe someone had a stretch limo with like fucking rope. I don't know. I have no idea. Yeah. But it's a great beer.
Here's a video posted.
That's our next endeavor.
I felt like it would go really, really well for some reason. Talk to Elon, get some automatons in there.
Yeah.
Good stuff, man. I like it. Thank you. Yeah. You're very welcome. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll open. I guess we'll open the rest of the beer. Well, should we break now? I think I'm out of glasses is the problem. So let's break and we'll run through all the rest of the beers. I want to talk about that Blackberry Cobbler Sour Ale. Kind of excited about that. I want to talk about Satan Wears Pajamas because I love a red ale. As you know, it's celebration season. So you got to love hoppy red ales this time of year. Guys, good for one more break?
Sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, you have no choice. All right, everybody, hang on. It's the session. We'll be right back.
Segmented, demented, fermented.
Fermented. It's the session.
Right! Yeah!
Come on! All right, everybody, thanks for sticking around. We are, I'd say we're wrapping things up, but we're not. We're actually just opening a bunch more beers. But we're hanging out with Paperback Brewing from Glendale, California. We have Chris and Zambo on the line. What is next in the tasting order? Sometimes I feel like tasting order doesn't really matter too much. It all is, you know, going to come out in the wash, but I want to be as nice as possible.
Well, how many do you have left? Do you have the red and you have the chills and thrills?
Bro, I have six beers left, and I don't think we're going to get to all of them. I have
shotgun two of them, and then we'll do the other
yeah.
four.
And then we'll talk. And if you don't, we're going to sit here in silence until you fucking do it.
That's a good one. You should pull that one out there, Bunny.
Bunny with a chainsaw.
Yeah, go for it.
I got thrills and chills. I got one night with Nora, which is great.
That's the blonde I mentioned. That's our number one seller in the pub. But I think you can save the Nora to have to get the sour out of your mouth later for your drive home or whatever.
Hell yeah! Oh, this is my house.
I would try the Bunny while you can still taste it. That is our biggest selling can, actually.
Okay, I'll do that. I got Death by Chocolate and Satan Wears Pajamas. And I had an extra tucked in by strangers, and maybe I'll give that to Sully. Who knows? So what do you think first?
I would do the Bunny.
Bunny first? Okay. All right.
Gotta get your Bunny on, bro.
Let's do it. Here, I'm going to leave all these out because my cooler bag is too cold. All right, Bunny with a chainsaw. Here's the label on that. Can you guys tell me a little bit about Bunny?
Chris, why don't you want to tell them about the label?
Yeah, that one was just kind of, I had an idea for Bunny with a chainsaw, a bunny with a chainsaw running through, you know, on a pink label, and just wanted a bright pink. And Zambo started working on a, I don't even think you R&D'd that, right? You just
that was our first and only Imperial Hazy until we started collaborating on other stuff. Yeah.
And I think when you taste it, the pink on the label makes sense. For me, it does.
Okay. Are you a color taster? Do you taste in color sometimes?
Yeah, sometimes. I try to make the label match what I think the beer tastes like, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't do a bright yellow label for a stout, you know?
Okay.
But this one, I'll let you try it. I'll give my kind of my thoughts on what it tastes like, but.
It smells great. It's very, very, almost berry. Not very berry, but very bright, almost kind of a berry pink. Okay, yeah. I mean, I get it, I guess.
I get it. Like, are you a hazy drinker?
No.
Okay.
I'm not
an IPA drinker either. And
I'm not an IPA drinker. No. And so this is this is my new thing now, is whenever I have a hazy IPA on, I want you guys to tell me what you think about it. So, Chris, you were going to tell me anyways, which is great. And it's perfect. You fell right into my trap. Then I don't have to pretend to know what I'm talking about. Because I do want to know, like, I want to expand my vocabulary and learn it, but I just don't drink these, except when I'm on the spot and having to work really hard at trying to find some non-stupid way to explain things to people who are smarter than me. So what were you going to say, Chris? What do you taste when you drink this?
I've said this to customers before in the tasting room, and aside from, like, oh, this hop has stone fruit or this is tropical, I think, and it works, there's definitely some fruity notes to it, but I get like a bubble gum and a mint together on it.
Okay.
For me personally. And I tell people, I know it sounds disgusting, but try it. It's amazing.
Zambo, what do you think? Do you rely on Chris for tasting notes?
Absolutely. Well, Chris Brandon and I actually collaborated on all the original beers, and we piloted a lot of them. I pushed the main hop in this, and I'm proud of myself. I'm going to say that this is the right hop for it. The mintiness is a light phenol that you get from the yeast we use. I get kind of a strawberry bubble yum note from it. And, you know, if I just describe that to a beer drinker, they'd be like, oh, no, no. Oh, no, that's not what I want. So that's why it's better to taste it before you hear people's descriptions of it.
It's like
I will say... when the haze craze started, I was in Santa Barbara and I did not like any of them out there. And I found it to be a hard stretch to even call it an IPA.
Yes.
Brandon and Chris were very much into the hazies that I wasn't. I think eventually they're going to get sick of them too. everyone goes through a process, but I did push for a little bit more hop presence than was common in the ones that are out, and still some of the ones that are out. So I get a little bit of hop bitterness and flavor out of this that I don't get out of a lot of the hazies that are out there. But again, it is really celebrating the aromas of that hop. And I think you nailed it when you said berry and Chris with the bubble gum.
Oh yeah.
You know, I think those are all pleasant notes when in harmony with it, still something that tastes like beer. You know, it's not a wine cooler. It's a beer.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, God, you brought up so many good points, and I appreciate that. Number one, yeah, the strawberry, like, bubble gum, I get, but if you take the essence of that gum and not, like, the over-sweetness, because when you talk about the gum, those, like, bubble yum, it's like, I'll just think of it as, like, I'm eating sugar, and then there's, like, a little bit of, you know, it's like the La Croix of, like, you know, gums. I don't know where I'm going with that, but I'm drinking this is a dumb example, and but I don't care. I was drinking this tea, and it was like a peach ginger tea or whatever, but it tastes like the when you exhale when you're eating a peach, like that flavor is what I was getting, and that's what I get, but strawberry from this beer.
Yep. Excellent.
It's very roundabout way of describing shit, man. Brains are weird.
Better that you have them sitting out too, because drinking a beer like that ice cold is not really going to do it justice. You're going to bring out more of just that mint flavor and those the sharper flavors, rather than having the whole harmonious blend of different flavors that are in this. There's four different hops in this, which some people is not a lot. Some people it's way too many, but I think,
what are you going to do, man?
I think they work.
Yeah. And I agree with what you're saying about the hazy, like Warren and I were really teeing off on hazies for a long time when they first hit the scene, because they're not IPAs. And, you know, as much as I don't drink them, I'm still sort of, you know, that home brewer in me is like, well, this is the style and it doesn't meet the style. So what are we doing? But they were chalky and they were weird, but now people sort of figured out how to do them. And the aromas that you can really bust out in these things is just phenomenal. That's the new level. If we can just harvest that method and then put it into, like, you know, a dark mild. I don't know.
Even your milds.
Dude, I know.
You got to get Eagle Rock on. Their flagship beer was a mild.
We've had them on a few times. Jeremy and Ting are my spirit animals as far as that. And then I was really disappointed when they stopped making Solidarity full time. I gave Lee a bunch of shit for that, but yeah, good people, good beer too. But this is great. This is very good.
And they're just down the road from us, actually. They're right off San Fernando, just like us.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So 2 miles.
We're talking to them about a collaboration soon.
Oh, you got to.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to, man. Yeah, we used to go there all the time when we went down to, like, Disneyland, but we haven't gone anywhere for forever, it feels like. So next time.
Yeah, we were friends before they opened. Jeremy was a Maltose Falcon, as was I. Club, you know. Mm-hmm.
Drew and everybody.
Ben Grossman, Sierra Nevada, there, because it's going full circle now.
Yep.
And Drew, of course, Drew Beecham. So I knew him when he was getting started, and he just asked for some advice here. And, like, I'm honored to do anything I can to help another craft brewery start. And it's just been so much fun to watch their success and go visit them now, take my family who they never knew down there. And, beautiful.
Yeah, they're great. They're always a good stop. And next time we ever get down that way, you guys are so close, we'll pop in to your place too. Sounds cool.
Great. We'll get a van.
The beers are great.
We have a van with a bunny tail on it.
Of course you do. Like a real, how big is the bunny tail?
We don't actually have one. I've been looking for it for a while, though.
It's on our list.
Yeah. See, tomorrow people are going to be writing in. They're going to be like, oh, I want to see this van. And people are like, Zambo, you got me again. I have to, whatever. Yeah, this is great, man. It doesn't, Chris, like what you were saying before the break, you know, Zambo sort of doesn't really make you realize the alcohol percentage you're drinking. This is an 8.2% beer. It doesn't taste like it. I mean, there's not a whole lot of real, well, I mean, I guess if I think about it, there's warming, but it could just be my phlegm. I don't know.
It takes patience and fermentation, proper yeast pitching and all those kind of things to keep those higher alcohols from forming so you don't get the heat, a decent amount of residual sugar and balance of flavors. We're just going to go in circles about this, but
you know,
that's kind of how I got my reputation for getting people drunk, because none of my beer tastes that strong.
I think you hit it on the head, man. The residual sugar content has to be dialed in.
Yeah,
that's the sweetness, because that has to carry through and help hide the bitterness of some of these hops. I mean, you're just going to get bitterness in general. I'm guessing, I'm saying like it's fact, but I don't really know because I've never made one. But that's sort of like the common thread of the good ones that I've had, is that there is that sweetness to carry through. I mean, it's the soft water and all that kind of bio transformation. But I think the level of sweetness does play a lot with that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice. And also mineral, again, back to our RO system, we're able to put a nice chloride content in these hazies, and that helps kind of mellow out any sharp notes in the flavors and help everything blend together.
With all these hops you guys are using, how's the supply chain issues? Is it messing with you guys, or are you able to sort of work around that?
You know, the hop crisis back in 2008 or nine, whenever that was yeah. a bigger problem than we're having now. Malt and especially foreign ingredients have been a problem with the supply chain interruptions. Hops, you know, there a lot of breweries unfortunately didn't make it through this, you know, last 2 years, and not many opened. We just happened to be one that opened right when it started. And luckily we didn't have like, you know, 100 barrels of beer sitting in kegs and 100 barrels in the tanks. And, you know, it's hard to say this, but if it had to happen, it happened at kind of the right time for us, because it helped us focus our marketing and what we're putting out there, and learn to see ourselves as what our consumers are going to see us as. And so we can give them something that they want that we still want to drink ourselves, to be fair.
Right.
The hops itself, I think some hops that you couldn't even get before became available because some people had to give up their contracts and things like that because their production went down so much. So the hop effect hasn't happened yet. I'm sure it's coming soon because people are opening up fast and things like that. But I think malt prices went up a lot because they couldn't move as much around, and the barley crops aren't coming in quite the way they wanted. But more importantly, if you were dependent on things from Germany, you know, it happens to be a beer country, if you haven't heard. they had a lot of disruptions. So, yeah, some of our German malts became Canadian briefly. And, you know, that, again, is something where experience comes into play, because you've been through this before for one reason or another, and you get good at reformulating, you know, here and there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess, Chris, if you're going to hire an experienced brewer, now's the time. Yeah. This is what you pay the money for, is experience right. like that. All right. Satan Wears Pajamas, which briefly I looked out of the corner of my eye on my notes and I thought it said Santa wears pajamas. And I thought, that's weird. But maybe he does too. Yeah. Maybe he does. Satan Wears Pajamas. Tell me about this red ale. I can't do
so that. So this does have some of that mid-level crystal malt in it, as well as a good amount of Munich malt, which is a melanoidin-rich malt that helps give you those nice flavors. But I remember making a lot of good reds at 21st Amendment, and a lot of people say, oh, I don't drink reds. It's not my thing. They're too sweet. And that kind of hit the nail on the head for the night back to the 90s. You like to talk about the 90s a lot.
Most of
the reds were very caramelly and very sweet, and they kind of thought they were mimicking like Irish reds, but they missed the mark a little bit. Honestly, a red is red in color, and there should be some balanced rich malt flavors, but you got to get the hops in there. You know, it shouldn't be sweet. You got to balance it and have just the right amount of bitterness. And then again, nice hop aromas. And in this case, we use some of those newer stone fruity kind of hops from the Pacific Northwest, like Azaka, you know, these ones that you don't see their names a lot, but they really add these cool little fruit notes to an already malty base. Without creating an actual sugary sweetness on your palate, you get these impressions of, you know, a nice balanced red beer. And I think the hop aromas are great on it too. It's really nice to be able to smell malt and hops at the same time.
Yeah, it's sort of a throwback. We don't do that anymore so much.
Well, they didn't hop them this much back in the day.
True.
You know, the hoppy red style was created by the BA to help. Basically, people called them red IPAs when they were first experimenting with them, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. And an IPA drinker didn't care for that terminology because they wanted an IPA, a lighter colored, you know, drier, crisp kind of thing. So I think calling it a hoppy red was really the right move.
How times change, though.
Yeah. Don't I mean, it's a growth industry. You know, we chip away a little bit at the big guys every year, always. And you can tell based on all the breweries they acquire and how they're marketing themselves and hiding the fact that they're mass producers. But the bottom line is it means we're on the right track and we're the ones who are paying close attention on the production side, not just on the marketing side, which is what they do. So yeah, we're pretty happy with Satan Wears Pajamas.
What kind of malts in here? I know you said the higher crystals, but can you give me what specifically? Because it is very rich in those red tones, those red crystal malts, but not overly sweet, if that makes sense. It's almost, I want to say, like, if you get, you know, sometimes you get like a crystal 120 and it's like almost smoky, but not really smoky.
Yeah.
It's like almost pushing that edge.
And the C120 and the Special B, which is around 110 in color, similar crystal malts. Those are great for this kind of beer, but just a little bit. Because if you overdo it with those, then that becomes the feature of that beer. And they just should be adding another layer of complexity. Mm-hmm. To get a nice base for that red that those can dance in is where we use the Munich malts. And their color is down around 7. So not even in the same ballpark. You know, our base malt is at 2. Munich malts are at 7, but have these rich melanoidin flavors that really help bring forward those expected flavors from a red beer. And then you add little bits of your higher crystals and maybe even a pinch or two, spoiler alert, of chocolate malt, just a tiny bit.
Okay, all right.
To put just a controlled amount of roast in the background, not anything forward enough to taste like, you know, a more Irish red. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, it doesn't have to finish too sweet, and you want hop aromas in there as well. So big late hop additions, and it's dry hopped, which wasn't done traditionally with reds. So.
I like it. Yeah, that's a good, that's a big, hearty. I don't know. Is hearty a good word to use? I don't know. Wow, it's 7.1%. What is wrong with you? I mean, I thought maybe 6.5, you know, but wow, that's crazy. I love it. It does not taste like that at all.
Chris, you want to tell them about the label?
Tell me about the label, Chris.
Satan Wearing Pajamas.
A smoking jacket, specifically. A smoking jacket and a captain's hat.
It's so much fun when he describes these to me before I see the art. He says, we're going to go for like this Satan looking kind of like Hugh Hefner sitting comfortably in a chair with like a smoking jacket. You know, I'm like, okay, sounds great.
Yeah.
And two snow leopards.
And two snow leopards. Well, and then the bunny slippers look an awful lot like the bunny with a chainsaw.
There you go. You know, little illusions here and there.
I love it. I think that's cool, man. Yeah, good stuff. I like it. And how is the red style as a style, selling wise, popularity wise? Are people sort of into it, or is it? We don't really know. Mid sales. I don't know why I asked these stupid questions.
It's seasonal. Okay. We definitely. I mean, it's popular to the extent that we do have a lot of requests for it, that it has been something that we've been kind of exploring as becoming a beer that's around a little bit more often.
Oh, cool.
It's becoming a core beer.
I like that.
And, you know, nice. We love that. We love having some different styles that we brewed so many IPAs during the quarantine, you know, during the pandemic, just because that's what was selling. So it was really hard for, you know, some of the beers, the German beers that I would like to see and that Brandon would like to see that we weren't making at that time. It's nice to have a tasting room open that we can kind of bring those back and kind of celebrate those beers. So that's big for us.
Yeah.
Love seeing that.
Sounds like it. Okay. I got two left. I got, and we don't have to get to them all, but, we'll see. Chills and Thrills,
man.
Chills and Thrills and Blackberries. I'm more concerned about you guys. I'm already home, so I don't need to deal with it. Chills and Thrills and Blackberries or Death by Chocolate? I guess Chills and Thrills first.
Yeah, it's a tough call, but yeah, I go ahead and have the...
Let's do that.
Yeah, Chills and Thrills.
All right. Why not? Why not?
It's real pureed blackberries, a touch of boysenberry, which we don't advertise.
See, false advertising, dude. It says in blackberries, but not...
It's not false advertising unless you claim something false.
Well, it's true. I guess you're right.
It is a kettle sour. We started a kettle sour program. Our first one was raspberry lemonade that used lemons from my backyard. That's kind of cool.
That's cool.
And it's not from my backyard. It's real pureed blackberries.
Wow.
special malt selection to bring out the cobbler-like flavor, the bready notes, biscuity notes. Yum.
What malt selection, Zambo? Come on. Talk to me, baby.
I said biscuity. Okay. I can't make it much more obvious.
Okay.
Yeah, we also, if you've ever had a true like Belgian lambic, like they wouldn't sell well in America. The first sour most people had here was Lindeman's Frambois, which is more of a wine cooler. It's kind of, I used to call it entry level sour, but it's barely even a sour now. This is a true sour. It's just done with just the right bacteria and just the right amount of souring that it won't deter the adventurous craft beer drinker. You know, it's not the kind you're going to have at a sour and cheese festival, although it could hold its own there, you know.
Yeah, it's firm too. I mean, it's not, you know, when
you
I
don't need an antacid to drink it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, blackberry cobbler sour ale. So why call it that? Is that what you were trying to go for? Like, hey, let's just blackberry cobbler. This would be cool as a beer.
That's what the team discussed. And, you know, they tasked me to mimic that flavor. And I did my best. I think we're all pretty happy with it.
Okay. And, you know, not for any reason, but I don't know. I just sort of like hearing how these things come together. Because it is not necessarily something that I would automatically, you know, think about.
They literally said blackberry cobbler. Its predecessor is called strawberry shortcakes.
Okay.
You can imagine what dessert they wanted that to taste like.
And yeah.
I impressed myself. You know, I mean.
You got to do it, man. No one else will.
Make it difficult for him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I stay up all night thinking about this stuff. I go to the store. I get fat on store-made desserts. yeah
this is really good, man. It you know, you got the kind of darker berry notes coming through and the aroma really well.
Yeah, and some of that is these are the same aroma descriptors you'll get when you look at these hops on the web and stuff, and there's no reason to fight it. Like, just compliment it. Whatever fruit flavor you're going for, use the hops that also have that descriptor. You know, I remember someone saying once, and I don't remember exactly the beer, but I'll give you an example. I did an orange beer and it had orange peel and Cascade hops. And they're like, well, how do you know what the orange came from? The hops or the orange peel? I'm like, I don't care. I wanted some orange notes in there and I got it. So yeah, it's really just about compliment, sometimes contrast, but in this case, compliment.
See, I think that's part of the mystique of commercial brewing that homebrewers don't really get part of the time. Maybe Chris, you know what I'm talking about, where it's like, how do they do the thing that they do? Mm-hmm. Just sometimes there's no mystery about it. Sometimes there's no formula. It just, like you said, you just, I don't know. I don't really give a shit. It just happens.
I remember that from my homebrewing days too, that you kind of want to be in control of everything. But when you really learn to do it right, you find out you're not the one in control. You're just offering up the cuisine to the yeast. The yeast is in control. So if you feed them well, tell them what you want, nurture them, they will give you blackberry cobbler.
You said it's a kettle sour. How are you adding the bacteria for that?
In the kettle?
Yeah. But like, you do like the, what do you?
We get a proprietary lacto blend.
Okay.
And we do generally a 3-day sour, depending on what we're working on.
Oh, okay.
But we'll do a full mash, and you want your acidity lower on the mash too. Like I said, our first one, we actually put lemons in the mash to acidify it, which was kind of cool. And then you pitch it in, and then I put big black wrapping around every orifice of that kettle and signs that say, don't open this or the brewery will explode. Yeah, brewers aren't big fans of bacteria in the brewery. I saw you had the Rare Barrel guys on, or the other half, the clean half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the other things. But yeah, they point out the dangers. And Vinny at Russian Rivers, he had big orange tape on his sour kegs, and they all had to stay behind an orange line. And so, yeah, separating sour from non-sour is critical. But the beauty of kettle sours is, as long as you keep everything in the kettle, then you boil it before it comes out of there, you're still pretty safe.
Okay. Got it. That's a good beer.
So far.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll have Sour Bunny with a chainsaw next year. We'll see.
You never know, man. You never know, man. Making the new styles here. Yep, I like it, man. The blackberry flavor comes through really nicely, but it's not overpowering. Like you said, the sour isn't really overpowering as well, but it's firm. Good job. I like it a lot.
Thank you. Kudos again to Chris for the imagery on the cans, because it really helps drive people's expectations when it goes in their mouth.
I like it. Yeah.
If we call it a boysenberry cobbler stout, people might have still bought it, but
maybe
it is real blackberries, and you know, the coloring on the cans. I love the imagery. I think it really helps bring it home.
Yeah, you know, in that ombra or whatever, the different colors sort of blending in together.
Yeah,
they'll sort of kind of match.
Yeah,
the color of the beer, so it came out great.
Yeah, Chris would often ask me, "What color is the beer going to be? I need this for the like." Well, how do I describe it?
Is there an SRM to Pantone?
SRMs, but it's all about interpreting those too. So we should try to come up with some common object.
Put it in a Photoshop and switch it from Pantone to SRM, and it works just fine.
Yeah, nice. Oh, you just came up with a good app.
Helping the creative sides of the world work together. The last one I opened, Death by Chocolate, which is a German chocolate cake imperial stout at 8.2. Tell me about this beer, please.
So that was a lot of fun, because first we had a discussion like, do we need to do coconut in another beer? You know, we don't want to be known for this, but it was just the right beer. They gave me the option, but they said German chocolate cake. So I went to my store, I got some German chocolate cake. I took two bites and gave the rest to the staff, because I don't really eat dessert. I drink enough beer. That's my dessert. But
right.
I liked the nuttiness combined with the coconut. Like, that was a beautiful part of it. So this has pecan, coconut, and then cocoa nibs, a good amount of cocoa nibs to really bring out those chocolate flavors. So it tastes like German chocolate cake.
Yeah.
As far as I know, I've only had a few bites, but I've had more than that in beer volume, I assure you.
Yeah. You know, and with German chocolate cake, or the German chocolate, it's that, you know, that high percentage cacao level that sort of has that, I guess it's tannin. I don't know. And then nibs can kind of get that too, because it's, you know, whatever. But this, you have that translated over. And I think a lot of the times, like pastry stouts like this, if this is a pastry stout, I don't know. If you weren't trying German chocolate cake, I'd be like, wow, that is kind of, you get that tannin thing. But you replicated that sharp German chocolate, the dark chocolate flavor really well, I'm assuming, with those nibs. I love using nibs in beers, and I've used them forever.
Yeah, thank you. I did read up on recipes. I love reading recipes before I cook and stuff. And they all said the common American fallacy is to use milk chocolate, because it is a much darker chocolate they use over there. So we did not put any lactose in this, which is nice to say, because a lot of chocolate stouts have lactose to give it that milk chocolatey flavor. So there's none of that in there. It is just a lot of really fresh cocoa nibs.
Yeah, and I don't think you want that, because that lactose will kind of round everything out. I don't think you want that. Mm-hmm. You want that sort of assertive chocolate flavor, the almost bitter chocolate flavor.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
and it's imperial, cool, so they finish higher gravity anyway, a little sweeter on their own, so you really don't need the lactose to force that forward.
Yeah, well, and you have the tannin from the nibs, and I've made it up in my mind that's exactly what it is. So I'm not gonna be persuaded.
Okay, yeah, we'll go with that.
But it's, you have that sort of doing some cleanup work on any residual sugars too. So it does taste like it finishes pretty dry.
Yeah, that's one of the things. If you're gonna do an imperial, you don't want it to be cloying. So you need to have something to cut through the sweetness. It's either hot bitterness or it's tannins. You know,
yeah.
I mean, or acidity. You know, yeah, there's a couple of different things that can do it. But in this case, hopping is moderate, but it's definitely the tannins that help balance that sweetness.
How long were the nibs in the fermenter?
They go in almost like dry hopping. A couple of days at ferment temperature at the end of primary, and then while it's chilling. And so the idea is that at those warmer temperatures, there's more solubility and those flavors come out. And then as you chill it, they kind of move around into the and stay in the beer, and then somebody has to pull the the nib socks out of there eventually after the thing's empty. I
Is it you or do you have an assistant?
No, I gave my team a challenge on that one. They said it took a little longer than expected, Zambo. There's going to be overtime. I'm like, okay.
Well, at least it doesn't make us do it anymore.
That's right.
We did grains out for a bit. That was...
Oh, geez. God bless. No, that's tough work, man. That's tough work. Yeah, you guys should just change jobs one day. Zambo should do the art for a can. Chris and Brandon should be brewing a beer.
Be a lot of stick figures.
Somehow I think it might work. I don't know.
You'd get another cream ale from us.
I love a good cream ale, man. That's a good style. Yeah, this is, wow, the aroma is really great on this beer, too. It's, again, it's well-rounded, man. You do these flavors, these aromatics that are well-rounded and complex, and they ebb and flow, which I like, too. They're not just like a one-dimensional thing or whatever, which I think would be sort of easy to do. Like you said, oh, put some lactose in it and, you know, add some chocolate extract or whatever, and then here's our thing.
But, yeah, and what's fun about those complexities is that it's going to, different nuances are going to come out depending on what you're pairing it with. If you're having it with a rich, meaty meal, you're going to get more of the sharper notes out of the beer. And if you're having it with cheese, you're going to get a lot of the sweeter, chocolatey notes out of the beer. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah, and as it warms up, it's getting more chocolatey and less tanniny. This is a good beer. I really like this.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's great.
We made that for you, actually. Yeah.
Really?
Dude? Only one can of it was made. So.
I love it. This is great. This is like a Patreon reward. I appreciate that, guys. Thanks, man. I could see you have me on here, too.
Yeah, I think that...
I'm the handsome one. No, I'm the cat, I think, pretty much, is what I would be. I'd be the little cat. All right, boys. Well, we'll let you go, man. I ran through your beer, so that's all we got to say. Where can everybody find out more about Paperback?
You can follow us on Instagram, Paperback Brewing. You can also check us out on our website, paperback.la. You can come visit us in Glendale, California.
And yeah, come visit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like a cool space, man. Yeah, I like the space. You got a cool vibe going on.
They put so much time into that tasting room. It was gorgeous. You know, I'm focusing on the brewery, but I walk out every day and see them doing something else at the tasting room. And then we have the soft opening. And then everything shut down.
Oh, everything shut down.
Their faces.
And then it became storage.
Their bulldog faces. Like, oh.
Sounds like a beer name to me. Yeah, that's got to be a bummer, man. And I'm really glad that you guys made it through. I mean, you had no choice, I would imagine, just to push through. And, you know, it's funny, Chris, because early on in the interview, you mentioned the word pivot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was doing, I took over the shows from Justin because, you know, Justin, who's the normal host, he has a bar in Concord. He's working on that, just like what you guys are doing, right? Trying to keep that afloat. So I'm like, okay, I'll do this show from my house until we can get together and everything mixed, you know, and then it's 2 years later and I'm still here. But I use the word pivot a lot because that's what you had to do. So much people were making fun of me. So I feel vindicated that you use the word pivot. And, you know, so thank you. For
do what you got to do to stay alive, you know. And
yes, yeah,
it's either that or I go back to advertising, and no one wants that.
No one wants that, man. It sounds stressful as hell, and then you don't get to look at Zambo every day.
I know that those beautiful eyes, man.
All right, we'll let you guys go. Thanks a lot, everybody, for tuning in. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much to our sponsor, More Beer. And definitely, if you're in the Glendale area or the LA area in general, it sounds like all the way down through to San Diego, check out the Paperback Beer. And then if you're in the Bay Area, of course, from Sacramento to Oakland, as the man said, check out and look and ask around. Ask around for your local good beer shop to bring in some paperback because it's very good. All right, guys, until next time, this has been The Session. We'll see you later.
JP's an asshole. Justin's a nice guy and winning the race. JP does great as his charity.